ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument is United States v. Johnson. Mr. Schrantz.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Aaron Schrantz on behalf of the appellant, Henry Johnson. Your Honors, we are back before the Court this morning because the sentencing judge in this case committed a significant procedural error in resentencing Mr. Johnson to life in prison. The district court did not satisfy its obligation to fashion a reasonable sentence for Mr. Johnson, who is a Category 1 offender whose only prior conviction was a misdemeanor offense of driving on a suspended license. Instead, the district court treated the guideline sentence of life imprisonment as presumptively reasonable, and that is a presumption the district court does not enjoy. The sentencing transcript makes very clear that the judge recognized the inherent problems in the 100-to-1 crack cocaine to powder cocaine ratio. The court expressed hope that Mr. Johnson might have a third opportunity for a lower sentence if and when Congress amends the guidelines. But instead, I think the sentencing transcript reveals that the court felt constrained by Congress.
No, I don't think that's accurate. She knew that, who's the judge?
Yes, Your Honor, Judge Scott.
She knew that she was not bound by the guidelines, but she just thought, you know, in her view of what a proper sentence is, that it would be better to wait for Congress to do something about this rather than for her to do that. So that's a view about the weight that the guidelines should have as a matter of her personal penal philosophy, which is different from thinking that she was bound to give a guideline sentence.
You're right, Your Honor. Our argument is not that the judge misapprehended her discretion to depart from
the
guidelines.
Okay, then what's the issue?
That implicit in her decision, she pressed her thumb on the scale in favor of the guideline
sentence.
That's
because her penal philosophy is that, you know, the guidelines people are experts and Congress is expert. And she wants to defer to their views, not because she feels bound as a matter of law, but that's her idea of how you do the right sentence.
Well, that's one view of it, isn't it? And I want to ask you another question, and it's this. Can a district court decide that the Sentencing Commission has, let's say, more wisdom and experience on sentencing matters and decide as a matter of course that although the judge knows she has the authority to disregard the guidelines, that as a policy matter, she would follow the guidelines in every case before her?
I think the judge has to determine what is a reasonable sentence for the defendant that's in front of him or her, applying the 3553A factors. And if the judge determines...
Does this judge always give a guideline sentence? Does she always recite this view that she did in this case?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, that's kind of important, isn't it?
Well, it seems to me that it's almost as if she was saying that although she understands that the guidelines are advisory and she understands that she has the authority to deviate, she chooses to treat them as mandatory.
Well, and Your Honor?
Well, that of course implies she does this in every case, does she?
I don't know the answer
to that. Well, shouldn't you?
I can't say in every case whether this judge has applied the guidelines.
You've never appeared before?
No, this is the only case I've appeared in front of Judge Scott. But the argument is that under 3553, the judge has to determine what is a sufficient sentence.
Yes, but of course, she can always
necessary.
Give a guideline sentence, right?
Well, if you determine that it's sufficient but greater than
well,
not greater
did.
Than necessary, well, Your Honor, I think in this case she didn't. If you read the sentencing transcript, she indicates over and over again that she's hopeful he'll have an opportunity for a lower sentence. She imposes the sentence regrettably, indicating that she doesn't think that Mr. Johnson deserved a life sentence,
so
but felt constrained.
So what she's saying is that this isn't the sentence I'd like to give you. This isn't the sentence I think you deserve. But this is the sentence as a matter of policy I'm going to give. Is that right? And that raises the question whether she can make that kind of policy. Mm-hmm.
And that really...
Is that right?
I think that's right, Your Honor. That she, I think her language indicated that she felt constrained to deviate from the guidelines and
that's
gave the guidelines...
You're saying something different.
She gave the guidelines
constraint
undue
is different.
Deference.
Constraint is different, right? Constraint means you're not making your own judgment, you're deferring to authority.
I think the record indicates that's what happened in this case, Your Honor.
And I take it that you feel that it's very problematic and would at least violate, let's say, at least the spirit of Booker, which, of course, holds the guidelines to be advisory only.
Well, and Rita, which says that the district court does not enjoy a presumption that the guidelines impose a reasonable sentence.
That's why it's so important to consider what she does in other cases. Because if in other cases she departs from the guidelines, that would show she does not have a view that the guidelines are presumptively binding on her.
So the next time you come in here, you be sure to have looked up every single case that any judge has decided so you can tell
Just
us.
Just Judge Scott.
I will put that on my list. I did look up the population of Quincy because that was a question you asked last time.
Limited the number of cases you'll have to look at.
Why, that might be an informative factor.
I think it's decisive because if she said in other cases, I'm not going to give a guideline sentence, how would you infer that in this case she felt constrained?
Looking at the sentencing transcript, Your Honor, I think the transcript is very clear that she was unduly deferential to Congress.
She said she wasn't constrained.
That's what she said in the
first
instance.
Well, you said to look at the transcript, and I'm telling you what's in the transcript.
In totality, she said on no less than three or four occasions.
You're reading between the lines.
Well, if you look at cases like Schmidt and Ross, in both of those cases, the district court stated, I understand I have discretion to depart from the guidelines. But then they later indicated, well, Congress has spoken. I think it's wiser to defer to Congress. I don't think that I can depart from that. So it's the same kind of language here. While the court acknowledged discretion.
She couldn't depart from it?
What she said is.
Did she say she couldn't depart from the guidelines?
She did not use that phrase, no, Your Honor.
What did she say?
She said, quote, the more prudent approach is to let Congress do whatever it chooses to do in the end. Again, the more prudent approach is to wait until that happens. And
what if I were a sentencing judge and I said, you know, I really don't understand this 100-to-1 business and how serious crack is relative to powder, and so I'm going to go with the guidelines and wait till Congress does something. Would that be wrong?
If the court then determined...
Just answer my question.
I think you have to look at the 3553
factors. No, I want
you
to answer my question, yes or no.
Yes, if the court determined that...
Yes, I want a yes or no question. I've told you exactly what the judge is saying. There's nothing more.
If that's all the judge says, no, that's not sufficient, Your Honor. I'm into my rebuttal time.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Schrantz. Mr. Hartzler?
Good morning, Your Honor. Joe Hartzler for the United States. To address your question, I'm at a little greater advantage than Ms. Schrantz because I practice in the Central District of Illinois in Springfield where Judge Scott used to preside. So I'm aware that she does not always sentence within the guidelines. There's a case that was, I think, just filed here, Chambers, where she departed no longer using that term, but she varied from the guidelines. But I think that generally I shouldn't say present tense because she's no longer sitting. She's retired from the district court. But she generally would sentence within the guidelines. Of course, there are a lot of cases in which the government is seeking a sentence lower than the guidelines for cooperation. So you have that bundle of cases as well, where the judge will often honor the government's request for a sentence lower than the guidelines. If I can go back to Judge Rovner's question, I think that for a judge to presume that the guidelines are appropriate in every case would suggest that the judge was not reflecting on the 3553 in providing individual sentences. So, frankly, we would not like to see that, and have not. But I think that in this case, clearly, Judge Scott understood her discretion to sentence below the guidelines and selected, because of the circumstances of this case and this particular defendant, that it was appropriate.
Didn't she say she just that she was not going to avail herself of her new authority under the case law to deviate from the ratio that until Congress acted? And that sounds like a policy statement.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. Yeah.
Well, that's not an individualized sentence under 3553A.
You're saying it is not?
Yeah.
Well,
she almost apologized for the sentence at the end.
No, I thought you addressed that appropriately, that she apologized that the sentence has to be so that he deserves such a harsh sentence, but she wasn't apologizing for the fact that she had to impose such a harsh sentence.
Oh, I don't see it that way at all, Mr. Hartzler. I really
please
don't. At best, it was very troubling to me the way she communicated the sentence. To me, it looked as if she really had abdicated her responsibility in a way that would conflict with Booker, and that it almost sounded like a per se rule. She's announcing that even though she knows she has the authority, basically she has a per se rule of following the guidelines. That's what it seemed like to me. So
I don't see that.
At best, it's, you know.
You mean a per se rule in every case? I just don't
see
that.
No, I don't know about. She had a per se rule in this case.
I think that her rule in this case was a conclusion that it was appropriate for Mr. Johnson. Bear in mind, this is the second time she had sentenced him. She sentenced him pre-Kimbrough to life in prison and in post-Kimbrough.
Well, but that's not unusual, is it? We send these things back to the district judges and they stand their ground. They find a new way to get to the old sentence.
Well, that actually is not always the case.
I didn't say always. There have been
a number of post-Kimbrough cases where the sentence has been reduced.
No, I said often.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
But it suggests that the district court judge, in this case Ms. Judge Scott, has dug her heels in somehow. And frankly, Judge Rovner, I just don't think that's appropriate here. This man had gone to trial. It was a lengthy trial. He was the manager of a sizable organization. The amount of crack is pretty staggering.
But that's another issue.
Well, but under any circumstances, the amount of crack, this is the same panel that reviewed the case the first time, so if you've reviewed the transcripts, you know that there were a lot of people dealing a lot of crack, and the numbers are very high. I mean, this was not an individual who was undeserving of a very harsh sentence. So I don't think there's anything inappropriate about a judge saying that I'm imposing a life sentence. I recognize that that's harsh, and I'm sorry that you deserve it. I'm sorry for what you've done. You deserve. Yes, I know we disagree. I see you shaking your head.
I can't control my head.
Well, if I can't convince you, I'll stop talking. But I.
Why? You've got a friend.
No, Judge Rovner. I mean, I don't want to personalize this, but I would think that probably everyone feels it is a shame that someone such as this has to go to jail for life as a result of this crime. It's a shame that he did it in the first place. Yes.
I don't feel that. I think it's a shame that she didn't explain herself properly. That's what I think is the shame.
And
to make, to make it, that's what I think is the shame.
Then we have
to be here arguing for the second time.
Go back to the first sentencing then. She explained herself very well as to why this man deserved a life sentence. The case was remanded only to to decide whether or not that's the same sentence that she would impose post-Kimbrough. If she understood that she had discretion to take into consideration the crack versus powder cocaine disparity, would she impose the same sentence? And she said, I understand I have that discretion now, and this is a case in which I would impose the same sentence. I don't think it's fair just to look at the transcript of the second sentencing and say she did not adequately explain what sentence. We're only back in the second time because of the Kimbrough issue.
Well, she was so busy discussing what Congress would do that, seemingly not to have realized that Congress had already done something. So, anyway.
Okay.
It's not
what
a,
I'm trying
it's not
to
our first time, Mr. Hartzler.
It's what did you say?
It's not our first time to disagree.
No. I would urge you, though, to consider the first sentencing hearing where the judge did explain herself and did explain why this particular defendant deserved a life sentence, which all of us will agree is exceedingly harsh.
I might agree with you that he deserved a life sentence.
And
what I disagree with is that I got that from the judge's sentencing, and that's a problem.
But you're saying that based on the second sentencing, on the resentencing, which you referred to her...
Because that's the case in front of me at this moment.
But that was only in front of you because of the Kimbrough issue. And the issue is whether or not she should have departed now knowing that she has the discretion. And she concluded that that wasn't necessary or appropriate, having fully explained why a life sentence was well-deserved at the first sentencing. So you're expecting her to go through and give her reasoning at the second sentencing, and I think that's unfair to Judge Scott.
Well, I don't like shorthand.
I appreciate that. And to the extent that she failed at the second sentencing to explain why he deserved a life sentence, maybe a fair criticism, but the case was on remand for a limited purpose, for her to determine whether or not she would impose a lower sentence. Okay, I see that I'm not going to be able to persuade you, but thank you for listening. If there are no further questions...
I love listening to you.
Well, thank you for that as well. The feeling's mutual. I'll be back in another case here in a moment.
Thank God.
We'll talk some more. Judge Ripple, can I persuade you on this so I can at least get 2 out of 3? That Judge, I hope you'll look at the first sentencing hearing if you're questioning whether or not she gave adequate reasons for a life sentence.
Take a look at it, but it does seem, I am concerned as to whether she spoke as a matter of giving the individualized sentence, which in the terms of the statute says that she has to give a sentence that
yes.
is sufficiently severe, but no more severe than necessary for this
yes.
defendant.
Yes.
Whether that's what she was doing or whether she was saying, as a matter of policy in my courtroom, when I'm faced with this problem with crack cocaine, I'm not going to deviate from the ratio until it's in black and white in statute because everybody's going to be doing everything, and I don't think that's the way the country ought to be run. I don't think an individual district judge has that right, does he?
The right to decide to impose a guideline sentence in a particular case?
As a matter of policy.
I just don't see that. I think if you look at the transcripts of other sentencings, you will not find that. I mean, Judge Posner's point is well taken, but we don't have a record before you.
Why did she say at the end, I reluctantly impose this sentence?
I think that...
Why don't you just say it? I don't know.
What's that?
You started to say, I don't know.
I started to?
Didn't you? You said, I don't know. We don't know. That's the point.
Well, we don't know, but I think that we know Judge Scott, and her cases have been before this court frequently enough to understand that she's sympathetic to imposing these kinds of harsh sentences. It's not frequently that there's a life sentence imposed in her courtroom. It's not often that we have a defendant who's deserving of a life sentence. But I think that she explained herself quite well at the first sentencing and then explained why she was not going to depart after the Kimbrough decision. I've run over time.
Thank you, Mr. Hartzler.
Thank you.
Ms. Schrantz, do you have anything further? How much time does she have?
Very quickly, Your Honors. I'll just say that I think Mr. Hartzler is particularly generous to Judge Scott in the transcript before you, and I think there's no question if the record indicated that she said Mr. Johnson deserved a life sentence, we wouldn't have this issue on appeal. Mm-hmm. But she didn't do that, and that's why we're here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Schrantz. And you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the Senate. Next case.